So who with the resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 81. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about season 4 of Rebels. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
I've returned. Hi,
welcome,
everyone.
Welcome back, Danya. We've missed you.
I missed you too, like a lot. So, yeah, but I'm back from my American adventure.
In D.C. and New York and everything. So we're glad. We'll hear about that in a bit. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperbolt.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook today for free. Check it out. I like Audible.
I know you do. You're a huge fan of audiobooks.
Well, I like audiobooks because I get to, like, I can listen to them while I drive. And so when I drive, like, you know, if I'm driving up to Cincinnati or Indianapolis, I have 2 hours to burn. It's like, I can just listen to music or I can listen to a book.
I don't know, plus, I get it.
Plus, like, because I'm all about the digital stuff, like the Whisper Sync technology where, like, I listen to, like, a half an hour of the book or an hour of the book and I pick up my Kindle and I'm right back where I was at on the book. You know, I can attack the novel from two fronts.
Yeah, you know? Meanwhile, I've, like, spiraled into buying, like, physical books again. I've literally got a pile on my desk that's, like, I bought a couple of the new Star Wars ones. And
I did physically buy From a Certain Point of View. I purchased the hardback of that one.
I've got a copy of that, thanks to Michal. She gave me one while I was in New York, which was really nice of her. So I do have one. It is in my bag. I need to unpack it. I got a couple of other books as well from Del Rey and Penguin Random House. Ended up getting The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue. Like, I've ended up buying so many books. The new Wonder Woman book, the, like, by Leigh Bardugo, and, like, all sorts of stuff.
I don't know. Like, for me, I still prefer digital for me, just because, like, as much as I want to have all the Star Wars books, I have all the legacy books on one bookshelf. Like, one bookshelf is full of Star Wars books. Then I have another bookshelf for, like, the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and all the other books. And I'm like, we don't have room for bookshelves everywhere. And on top of that, like, I am buying a lot of books for my daughter. So I'm all about the Audible and the digital version.
I really want to live in my own place because I need more bookshelves. I actually have books still packed in boxes in my office space because I don't... What?
You should make a coffee table out of books, like, as the legs and stuff. And then that way, you have to find another book.
The books.
Well, I was going to say, then you have to find another book to replace it when you want to read that book.
Yeah, but it'd warp the spines in the actual books and stuff. No. Bad idea, Mikey. No.
Well, I'm thinking, like, hardback. They'd probably all be fine. Like, I can't imagine being warped if you stack.
Depends on what you're putting on top of the coffee table, because if there's quite a lot of weight on it. Anyway, we're getting way off track.
I can't imagine a coffee table book on top of a table made of books, but who knows? Anyway, let's move on.
Yes, guys, if you want to support us in any way, you can do so by joining up on our Patreon. We have a lot of really cool perks on there. You can check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. It means that you can jump into the Discord chat and talk to us whenever we're around, pretty much about anything. We've got multiple text channels on there for a few different topics. We've got a hockey one, which, now that the regular season has started back up, is probably going to get a bit of a workout, especially because the start of the season's been a little rough for my team, so I'm going to be in there a lot. We have one for Voltron, so if you saw the new Voltron series, then we'll be in there as well. I might start one for the final season of Rebels, so you can come in and spoiler away to your heart's content in there. But also, you can join the recording studio through our Discord chat, which means you can listen to us live as we record these episodes. You can also join our movie nights and listen to us as we record commentary. And also, we will be releasing After Dark episodes, which is basically one long off-topic ramble for an entire episode. So if you enjoy our tangents, those are for you. We do have a couple up on our Patreon already, one of which is not locked to patrons, so if you want to check it out, you can get a taste for it. But yeah, you can find a couple of different tiers on our Patreon, so find the one that suits you and come and join us. But even if you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do have some merchandise for sale. We've got t-shirts and button packs on our website. But again, even if you can't support us, but you know someone who might enjoy us or whatever, share the link around. Share the love. Get people listening to us and joining our Happy Resistance Radio family.
I like it. Anyway, I think it's time for the news. So, big news this week. The untitled Han Solo film has had its title revealed via Ron Howard and Chewbacca in a Twitter video. The title is Solo, a Star Wars story. So what do you think about this, Danya? Just calling it Solo.
It's the blandest title that they could have chosen for this film.
I have an argument for this. Like, I know.
Yeah, I'm sure that you do.
Again, I am excited for the film. I like Ron Howard. I'm excited to see, like, the pictures of Donald Glover from this film make me beyond excited. If I was going to criticize it, the only other name they could have done that I would have made would have been happier would have been if they called it Lando, a Star Wars story, and simply pivoted and changed the movie to be about Lando. But I think just calling it Solo makes a lot of sense. The reason for this is, You really can't like say what it is. You can't call it the Kessel Run. You can't call it, like, think back to the Han Solo trilogy. Like, you can't call it any of those titles of, you know, the Paradise Snare or the Hutt Gambit or Rebel Dawn. Like, you can't call it any of those things, because if you do, you kind of are, like, kind of telling what the story is supposed to be a little bit. Like, you can't even call it, like, the Kessel Run or something like that. Like, people wouldn't know. Like, Rogue One really didn't say anything about the film other than it being a name. You know what I mean? And we knew the general premise of it. All we know, this is a young Han Solo film, and I think calling it Solo was a very creative way of simply hiding what the story is. Now, I think they could have just called it Han Solo, but I think Solo is, you know, whatever. You know, I think they could have called it Han Solo instead of Solo, but, you know, whatever.
No. It is, but also, like, I get, like, calling it Solo, but, like, also, Solo on its own has multiple connotations.
I know.
So then it sounds like it's just about him, when we know, realistically, it's not just about him, there are other characters involved, so it's kind of just a little clunky, a little awkward, much like I think the film is going to be anyway, so I guess it's going to be an accurate representation.
I will say, on the official press release from, not the Twitter announcement from Ron Howard, but on the official press release from Star Wars website, they still stated that the release date is going to be May 25th, 2018. So, that's, you know, I find that interesting that they're still going to keep that, you know, date versus pushing it to December.
I will wait and see. Like, I'm still not entirely sure that they're going to get it done. If they do, I don't know that it would be at the same quality as we usually expect from a Star Wars film.
Well, I think will be, but I think they've made this. I think what happened, because they were supposed to wrap with Chris Lord and Phil Miller, right? Or we got back. They're supposed to wrap with it, and they started editing, and they just didn't like it. So I think they went back, watched the rough cut, made notes of what they need to reshoot. They did all extensive reshoots, obviously. They even changed character, like, they rewrote characters that were going to be CGI characters to be human characters or practical characters, because they won't have time to do the post on it. So I think the edit is already there. Like, I think the story hasn't changed at all. I think the story may be portrayed differently. Like, the tone thing is going to change. But I think the story hasn't changed from the original like from the original vision of what Lucasfilm had for the Han Solo film. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. Like, they've made reasonable adjustments in order to meet that date. That means that maybe it's less reliant on post-production. But at the same time, there's still going to be a significant amount of it involved, which I'm still not entirely certain they're going to hit. But it's whatever at this point. Like, I'm basically, like, it's the film that I'm resigned to the fact that it's coming out. And so,
you're like, it's going to be out there, and it's what it is. I don't know. I'm still excited to see it. Like, you know, if you go through the tweets from Ron Howard, like, they do, it looks fun. Like, it looks like it's going to be a fun story. Is it going to be the best Star Wars film ever, you know, that they kind of cleaned it to be? I doubt it. No. But is it going to be up there? Probably better than the first two prequels? Probably. I can't imagine it not being. But I'm excited to see how it is, like, what it comes into. I do want to see, like, I want to see if Jabba's in it. I want to see if, you know, I want to see some of these other characters that we haven't explored in a Solo film. Get it? Solo? See, there it is. I'm okay with it. Now, once we got the title of the Solo film, oh man, there are so many jokes about this title. Have you had a chance to look at any of these?
Yes. I've seen many of them.
One of my favorites is the title simply called "Lol, a Star Wars Story," mm-hmm. which drops the it's you know takes a. There's also obviously Porgs, a Star Wars Story.
Yep.
And then when the one person tweeted out like, "I consolidated all of the jokes together," and he put a Porg coming out of a red Solo cup inside the banner.
Yeah.
So it's good, you know. At least they didn't call it a "Dude, Where's My Falcon?"
Yeah, I actually, that would be really funny though.
Would call it "Dude, Where's My Falcon?" It's something, you know. It's something.
Dude, yeah. What does mine say? Sweet. What does mine say, dude?
Dude, what does mine say? Sweet. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. But yeah, you know, and I'm going through these, I'm laughing here. We got a Solo, an introvert story. No?
I like all the ones that are about, like, the red Solo cups. I like the trademark lore, a Star Wars story, and it's got Solo next to the trademarked Solo for red Solo cups, because apparently that's trademarked.
Is it?
That's what it says in here. Yeah, it's a brand. There we go. Brack there with some good old American knowledge.
There you go. Alright. But yeah, so, you know, we'll see how the Solo film ties up, you know. Because, yeah, it's just called Solo. I don't know. There's just too many of these that I just love. Anyway, moving on to the month of October, we have StarWars.com has released a really cool to do-it-yourself tutorial on Halloween costumes for kids, but you could totally be done as adults. They have a really nice BB-9E, the new evil BB-8, or the droid that is Phasma's. We originally learned about BB-9E from the Phasma comic. But yeah, so learn how to make a costume, which I think is really cool, but you can totally make it a BB-8 instead of a BB-9E costume, and mm-hmm. you can make that as an adult. Like, I really like it. Like, did you see how it's made?
Yeah, I mean, Mikey, let's be real. I'm practically child-sized, so...
Well, I didn't want to say that out loud, but, you
it's
know...
It's okay, because, like, I've had it over the last, like, week or so when I was in DC as well, is everyone was, like, looking... We were at... the Catala Iceplex for where the Capitals practice, and they have a store, and they have the new jerseys that they had when they changed from Reebok to Adidas. And I was looking at all the jerseys, and I find one and I hold it up and I'm like, oh, this will fit. And I look at the price and it's like $60 or something like that. And I'm like, oh, perfect. I'm going to get this. Everyone's like, what are you talking about? They're like usually about $200. And I'm like, they're going, no, this says $60. And they're like, it's a youth jersey. Like, that's for children. And I'm like, well, it's saving me over $100 on a jersey, so I'm not going to complain. But yeah, it says child costumes, but I would fit into all of these.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, like, the BB-9E costume is really cool. Plus, I love playing with paper mache myself, so...
There's a tutorial in here, Mikey, though, that means that you can make your own Lando cape.
I know. I saw the Lando cape. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the Lando shirt instructions and the Lando cape. But can I just say that this kid is rocking this stash like none other?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. He's got the biggest grin running that stash. Like, that's all that matters.
The coolest kid in all of the galaxy.
Right there.
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
I am actually tempted because they've got a little pattern in here for a Leia camouflage cape.
Yep.
Like the poncho thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could do that. That would actually be really easy.
It's very easy to give yourself the Leia poncho from Endor.
Yeah.
And all you need is just like blue leggings or pants and just do a yellow stripe down the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that. I could totally do that. I can be Leia.
You can be Leia. Actually, that's the costume Leslie's actually working on right now for herself.
Nice.
Because I got my, I'm almost done with my scout trooper. Like, the armor's all trimmed and everything. Got the Velcro on. I got, you know, there's some sew-ins to be done. And of course, little baby Amelia is going to be an Ewok. So we got the whole Endor.
Yes.
Endor theme.
I demand all of the pictures.
Of course.
All of them.
There might be a special like post on resistanceradio.net if I finish all our costumes.
Yes.
In time. But I think that's going to be a Christmas card also. You know, the Star Wars stuff.
Am I getting one? I better be getting one.
Sure. There you go.
Yay!
Now, moving on to the next bit of news. Let's talk about Benicio del Toro's character. So Benicio del Toro's character in The Last Jedi is actually getting a comic, which I'm really excited about. Except the link I have here is not working. Awesome. But anyway, he's getting a comic from Marvel. So we're going to find out a little bit more about him, because all we know about Benicio del Toro is he is a slicer that is found on Canto Bight by Rey and... Not Rey. Finn and Rose.
Go figure. Wait, wrong characters.
Wrong character there. Yeah, I had to think about it. But he is getting a comic from Marvel, and we'll hopefully see a little bit more about why he is the way he is. In The Last Jedi. So that should be fun and exciting to see more about him.
That is quite interesting. Just because a lot of the spin-off comics or the comics that are very character-focused are usually for characters who have at least a semi-decent impact, especially if they've come from the movies first. Like, that's very interesting.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting because I feel like he's going to be a fairly influential character, or at least a perspective that we're supposed to learn from, like some more information about the Resistance or the First Order. Now, have you read the Phasma book, Danya?
I have not, because obviously I went away and I didn't really have a lot of time to read, okay. Unfortunately. I've been busy.
Okay, no, that's fine. We'll get caught up eventually. So I won't do any spoilers for anybody listening, but also for Danya. In the Phasma novel, you learn a lot about Phasma's past, which is, honestly, I have a newfound respect for her. But it's interesting because it does put her in a very different light. So I'm actually really excited to see Phasma in The Last Jedi, because you've kind of learned more about her. And obviously, there's not only the Phasma novel that dives into her backstory. You also have the Phasma comic that takes place right after we see her go to the garbage chute in The Force Awakens, which is also where we end up learning about BB-9E too. So Phasma obviously has taken a new role, and hopefully we'll see how she, you know, what role she takes in The Last Jedi. But, you know, she is prominently featured in the trailer fighting Finn with, you know, that big old clash between the two of them. So there's definitely going to be something where she's going to be hopefully more used in The Last Jedi than she was in The Force Awakens. especially since we've gotten all this additional information about her. So DJ is the same thing. I feel like we're going to get a lot more about him, and maybe he'll be utilized more in episode 9. Or maybe he's going to be used a lot in episode 8. We don't know.
We don't know. No, we don't. He's probably one of the characters that they've stayed like fairly tight-lipped on, which is quite interesting, especially with them now announcing a comic book. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which means there's probably more to him than meets the eye. Because if there's enough there with the character to do an entire comic book series, then we should expect something big from him, I would imagine.
I would agree. Now, speaking of the Last Jedi trailer, Danya, last week we did our breakdown, and you weren't here, because obviously you were flying from DC to back to UK, you know, across the pond and everything. What was your take on the trailer? What'd you think of it?
It was actually the most interesting to me out of all the trailers they've released so far. Very clever editing. Because I think it's really leading people to read it in a certain way, but it's like, it's too obvious that that's what they're trying to make you think. So the editing of it was superb.
Did you see Rian Johnson he tweeted out two different things about the trailer. He's like, oh, don't watch the trailer if you don't want to be spoiled. Like, if you don't want to know major plot points. Of course, yeah. I feel like that right there was completely like Lucasfilm hype. So like when you watch it, like, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to happen. But then like he even went back and said, oh, never mind what I last said. Go watch it. It's amazing. Like, obviously he knew what it looked like before he approved it, you know?
Yeah.
But like right there, like I think it's meant to like get the hype that like we're supposed to take it at face value. But I really can't imagine some of the things that they're telling, like, which we'll talk about in another episode when we have more people on, specifically about the theories that have popped up around episode 8 and the trailer. Like, you know, a little bit of Reylo and stuff like that. Like, I don't think Rey and Kylo Ren will get together at all. Like, that redemption story, I don't think it's gonna happen.
No,
but you know, even with him holding his hand out at the end, I think those are two crafted, two different scenes that are cleverly crafted together to make it look like.
Yeah, one. I like trailer magic is an art. So being able to kind of make you see a story that may not necessarily be there, especially with something as big as Star Wars, they're not going to give away. Like, think about all the previous trailers, particularly for, like, The Force Awakens. A lot of people had, like, a certain thing in their head about what they thought The Force Awakens was going to be. And then the actual film, like, once you saw the clips from where they came in the trailer in the actual film, it's like, oh, actually, most of these are, like, top-loaded towards, like, the start of the film, and it's barely covered anything at all. You know, you gotta remember that it's there to hype up and sell the film. It's not necessarily there to tell you everything that there is about it, particularly with Star Wars, because they tend to keep their secrets fairly under wraps. So I don't think that they're going to have told us everything that's happening. Now, on the other hand, like, it made me significantly more excited to see the dynamic between Rey and Luke. I thought, like, the little glimpses that we got there were really interesting, particularly, like, that idea of him seeing parallels between Rey and who we assume is Kylo, but from the trailer, you know, him being all like, oh, I've only seen someone with power like this one time before, and I wasn't scared of it then, I am now.
You know,
that's really interesting to me. Because it kind of changes the dynamic between Rey and Luke a lot, especially in like a mentor-mentee relationship, which I think a lot of us assumed that they were going to have. But if Luke is going to be extremely cautious of Rey and what she's capable of, like, that completely shifts the entire story, because if Rey is that powerful or has that much inherent ability in her that it terrifies Luke, then, and he doesn't help her control it or hone it or guide her in the right way, then who else can exploit that if she's not getting the answers that she needs? Mm-hmm. You know, Rey is fairly headstrong in, like, respect to wanting to know things and wanting to, like, be fairly independent. She's a survivor, you know, and the only way that you survive is having the information in order to deal with your life changing in a way that hers has fairly significantly. So, I don't know, there was just something about that that was really interesting. There was a lot of stuff like Finn and Phasma facing off and just all sorts of stuff.
It also begs the question of, you know, it's meant to draw us to automatically assume that it's between Rey and Kylo Ren, that parallel. But, you know, it can also be, you know, we heard rumors years ago, like 2 years ago when Rian Johnson was first working on the script, that it's not going to be, you know, as much as I want Rey to be Luke's daughter, but it was going to be a reveal that, no, Luke says, no, you're my father, that she was also born from the Force, just like Anakin was. And when you talk about him, you know, seeing that raw power once before, he wasn't afraid before, and now he is, you know, it takes you back to Empire Strikes Back directly. He says, I'm not afraid to go confront Vader, who was Anakin Skywalker. And Yoda tells him, you will be, and, you know, as he flies off in his X-Wing. Well, now, you know, he said he wasn't afraid before, but think about it. He lost a bunch there. That's when he lost the lightsaber, when he went to Cloud City and confronted his father before he was ready. So it could be a lot of different things. Again, that's diving deep into it, but it could definitely be because, you know, Star Wars, they like to tie all these things together. So it could be one of those things where it's not as obvious as the trailer makes it out to be. But on the other hand, maybe it is.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot we can theorize about, but
that's for another episode, too.
Yeah, there's a lot. We can break it down a lot. On the whole, very impressed with this trailer, though. I was excited for this film before. I think this one has, like, really, really hyped me up, because I think it was the most interesting in respect to, like, it had the most meat to it. All the trailers previous to this one have been very pretty, and it had, like, little glimpses that you could theorize about and kind of try and glean little bits from it, but it wasn't substantial enough for you to really dig into. This one was. This one had a lot to it. And it was very long. It was a very long trailer. I was actually, when I saw it, was the night that I got into DC, and I just got to my hotel, I dropped everything off, and I was like, okay, the hockey was coming on, I was on the right time zone, so I was like, oh, there's a sports bar close by, I'm gonna go to that and sit down. And literally they had the football game on at the same time as the Capitals ice hockey game, and the whole bar, the second that the Star Wars trailer came on, were literally screaming, turn the sound off the ice hockey and turn it on the football. Like, the whole bar. We wanna hear the Star Wars trailer. The whole place. Like,
of course. And, like,
yeah, it was so cool.
That's really cool, seeing it live like that in a big group.
Yeah,
like that,
in a sports bar. While, like, and there was still that, like, there were still sports things happening, like, on all the TVs around the ones that had been showing the football. Like, there was some baseball games, because I think it's, like, whatever it is that it's called. I'm sorry, I'm learning baseball right now, because my friends who are into hockey are like, you need to learn baseball as well. Is it the World Series that one's called?
Yes, the World Series is coming up, yes.
Okay. So that there were some games from that on, and then there was, like, the ice hockey was on, and there were a couple of different ice hockey games on. So it was really interesting to, like, have, like, those still happening either side of, like, TVs playing the Star Wars trailer, and you're in like an atmosphere that's very, you know, it's like, I wouldn't have expected that kind of reaction from people in a sports bar. Like, when they said that they were going to be playing the trailer during, like, Monday Night Football, and I was like, really? What's the crossover there? You're just going to make that's a sport that they're not interested in. And then I'm, like, there, and I'm like, oh, actually, crossover.
That's what they did for, what do you call it? The Force Awakens trailer. The first big one when tickets went on sale. when it says tickets now on sale, just like this one, was during Monday Night Football.
So, was it Monday Night Football? Was one of them during the Super Bowl?
No, that's when we were expected to get a trailer for Rogue One, and we didn't get it.
I thought one of them happened during a Super Bowl, but...
No, it was just Monday Night Football, so yeah. So definitely, like, it makes sense, you know. And there is a lot of crossover there. Like, there's a lot of, you know, Star Wars has a big, obviously, with, you know, the amount of money Force Awakens and Rogue One made.
Yeah, yeah,
$1 billion. There has to be a big crossover between a lot of things.
It was such a really interesting place to have seen the trailer for the first time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've got a really interesting story for, like, where I watched it.
Where were you when this happened? Anyway.
Sports bar in Washington, D.C.
There you go. So EA, next bit of news, Electronics Art, EA has shut down Visual Studios. Now, we talked about Visual Studios, back in 2016, when they announced that they were doing a new Star Wars game, and they showed glimpses of it from E3 back in 2016, and the graphics on it looked amazing. Basically, what was happening was they were kind of working on this game. And I'm looking at a picture from the early in-game footage. The character almost looks like DJ that is in the game. Mm. But basically, with EA shutting down Visual Studios, that game that they were working on, the untitled Star Wars game, is dead. Like, that game had a vague 2019 release window, and now it has no window at all. They did say that some of the design and the, you know, the graphic stuff and the stuff that they created for it make it be used in other games, but basically EA cited that, you know, basically the industry and marketplace shifts for anything that's a Destiny like always online adventure, you know, it's going to be where they're going to be going. So they're probably going to repurpose some of that stuff to give it a more Battlefront or something else type style game with it. But I'm kind of sad. I wanted a linear, kind of a classic, you know, Jedi Knight series type game.
Yeah. I mean, those are games that I'm actually really interested in playing. Star Wars is so good at the story-based stuff. Like, that's why we love it as much as we do. It has lore, it has history, it has, like, a real depth to it. And there's so much of that universe that hasn't been explored. So being able to play through a story is always really interesting and really, really fun. Not knocking the idea of, like, a Battlefront game or anything like that. Those, in their own right, are also very, very fun. They're just two entirely different, like, concepts. And, you know, I'm not a big, like, first-person shooter-esque kind of person. I play them. I do sometimes enjoy them, but I like games that tell a story. I've always been, like, a really, really big fan of, like, JRPGs, for example, because it included, like, a lot of strategy, a lot of, like, figuring it out, and a lot of story, and, yes, side quests and
battles. Some of the biggest Star Wars titles, you know, when you look at, like, the Old Republic titles.
Yeah.
Those were all RPGs, and even Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO version of the Knights of the Old Republic game series, it's still an RPG meet MMO, so it's a kind of a WoW meets RPG. It's an action RPG now, if you will. So it like, those are the games that I really, really enjoyed. Like, as much as I like Battlefront, because one, it looks beautiful, you know, I had to switch from PC to console for it because there just wasn't games, because I'm not a huge first-person shooter. I did get Battlefront 2 because I'm excited to play through the single-player story mode. But other than that, it's like, I have very little love for going online and getting beat up. I'm just not very good at console games. PC, I'm good. Console, not so much. Yeah. But yeah, so it's a little sad that this game has got scrapped. We'll see what it turns into, I'm sure. EA will announce something closer to, you know, release of The Last Jedi, because why not, you know, right on the coattails of your IP that's being released and all the hype around it and everything. Anything else about the news, Danya? We covered a lot of news today.
No, I think I'm good to move on if you are.
All right. So, our spotlight topic is also a bit of news. Season 4 of Rebels has just started. It started a couple days ago on October 16th with a two-part episode called Heroes of Mandalore. And that is going to be our topic of discussion for this week because it's just the two of us. So first of all, before we dive into it, Danya, what did you think of the episode or the two episodes? We'll count it as one long episode because that's really what it was. What did you think of the episode?
On the whole, really loved it. I always really love getting more about Mandalore, about like the structure of it, like who they are, how they fight, what they're doing, like the culture, the kind of the heritage of them, the history. Like, that stuff to me is, like, really, really, really interesting. I love getting Sabine-centric stuff as well. She's a character that I really enjoy. It also served, like, a huge purpose in, obviously, seeing as this is the final season, wrapping up that initial bit of Mandalore storyline, positing a new leader of the Mandalorians, you know, handing over the Darksaber. You know, it wrapped up some story beats that have been continuing for about season and a half already. And so it was really nice to kick off with that because we know that there's a lot to come with, like, Thrawn and it essentially leading up to the end of Rebels. So, I thought it was fairly successful. I was interested in the Duchess, the weapon that Sabine had created while she was at the Empire. I thought that, like, the effect of it, like, how they animated it with... So what they did, which was really interesting, was they lit the armor when the Duchess attacks, like, it's like a lightning sort of shock. But what they did was they lit the Mandalorian armor from the inside, so it looked like it was combusting from the inside. And that ash effect, like, when the Mandalorian's, like, completely burnt away and turned to ash, like, it was horrifically beautiful in the way that they did that. So there was a lot that was really effective. The other part of it was, like, that is such a huge weapon to have as well. There was an ethics part to it, I think, of that weapon.
That right there, the ethics part of it, which I think we should probably talk about that in more detail. But I agree, the ethics part of that weapon is really, really interesting. And I think that was a turning point for both Sabine and for Bo-Katan also.
It's that, because Sabine obviously repurposes the weapon, because as it is, and at the strength that it's at that point, like, it targets Mandalorians because it targets that armor and basically cooks them alive. But because of the specific makeup of the Mandalorian armor, which is unique, any stormtrooper or any other armor that's in the vicinity is not affected. It only targets and affects Mandalorians. Now Sabine, at the end of the two-parter, repurposes the entire machine to target any other armor, just not the Mandalorians, which was really cool. The thing that she does, though, with that machine that makes it really, really interesting is that she doesn't set it to kill, basically. So it is, like, at full strength, the Duchess can, like, it completely burned up some Mandalorians, like, it turned them to dust and ash. But the way that it's then repurposed and used towards the end of the two-parter is that it incapacitates rather than kills. And that is where some of the ethics comes into it, because here they have a weapon that now can, on a wide scale, target any and all stormtroopers and incapacitate them in one move.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use it? Do you not use it? If you don't use it, which they don't, they decide not to, they destroy it because it's not the Mandalorian way. It's also like, they're at war with an empire. There is a huge, like, to and fro here of, like, they're vastly outnumbered, outgunned, and outclassed on so many levels. Like, it's kind of like, it's like setting a phaser to stun, to take from, like, a completely different Star franchise there. you know, it was just really interesting to me that they had this kind of huge weapon that could have, like, fundamentally changed the course of the war, and they destroy it. Because it was not about mass casualties and death, which is what the Empire was going to use that weapon for. It was about Sabine reclaiming it and repurposing it to be more effective for the Rebels. So I don't know, there was just like an interesting to and fro on that. Like, I get why they had to destroy it, because it doesn't make an appearance anywhere ever in future else, canon, yeah. Because it's basically like it's a war winner. Like, there is no, if that could be produced on like scale,
a starship and used, or Death Star level, and just ridiculously large, it would, you know.
Yeah, there's like points of it where it's like, oh, that would completely incapacitate like any large scale stormtrooper army in one go, you know, like it would just knock them all out. It wouldn't kill them, but it would knock them out. And so they just wouldn't pose a threat. So I get why, in terms of the scope of the story and the narrative moving forward, that it was taken out of play. But it reminded me very much of, to like draw a parallel again with Harry Potter, which we did on one of our After Dark episodes, it reminded me very much of Time Turners. You know, here is an item that can fundamentally change so much of the story in terms of like changing the plot and how you approach it and do like so much good, but also can be used in really bad ways as well. Like, there's so mm-hmm. much about the Time Turners that throughout Harry Potter, that they're too powerful. Time travel is too much. And it makes things complicated with multiple timelines and so on and so forth. So from like a narrative standpoint, I understand why they've removed the Duchess entirely as an option. You know, it's no longer in play. But at the same time, it's like, you've put this forward as being a potential, and Sabine knows how to build it as well. So it's also kind of like, you have a huge resource at your disposal in order to turn the tide of the war.
Yeah.
What do you do about that?
Yeah, and that's what part of the ethics question that I liked in Rebels. That reminds me a lot of what they did in Clone Wars, where they tackled a lot of ethical questions because of war in general. And I guess that's where we're at in Rebels. We're at full on war between the Empire and Mandalore at this point. Mm-hmm. My takes on the episode, I'm not going to go into as much detail as you, just because I agree with you 100% on a lot of it. Was my biggest thing I liked about the episode was I liked that they were tying a lot of Clone Wars back to Rebels, and Rebels back to Clone Wars. Specifically, having Sabine name the weapon after the Duchess of Mandalore, the previous ruler of Mandalore, Bo-Katan's sister. So, you know, when you bring Bo-Katan in, if you don't remember, she was a lieutenant in Death Watch who was, you know, kind of against her sister, you know, who was a terrorist group against her sister Satine. Who was ruling Mandalore at the time. And if you don't remember, Satine was also the love interest of Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is like a whole nother type of like, you know, thread that ties all of this together. So Bo-Katan obviously comes back to go ahead and help out Sabine, and Sabine is the one that is, you know, she's leading and like recognizes that Sabine is a true leader. But it is Bo-Katan who is the one who has the moral question posed to Sabine in the moments of Sabine deciding whether to use the weapon that would change the tide for the Republic, or for, I guess, the rebels, by basically changing the Duchess' frequency, if you will, from going after the Beskar armor that is Mandalorian armor to the Imperial Stormtrooper armor. You know, like if they were able to take it to full power, take that weapon and use it on Stormtrooper armor, it would have taken out all the Stormtroopers. They would have had to change their armor or something like that. But Bo-Katan's like, is that, there's an honor in that. And really, honor is a huge part of who Sabine is and who the Mandalorians are. And like, yeah, we like, that's a whole thing there.
You stop and think in terms of the wider war, is there any honor in war?
In general, like, it just as by itself. So yeah. Overall, I liked it. I will say the episode started out a little weird for me. I watched it for the first time on the new Disney streaming service, Disney Now. And my wife and I were watching it, and I was like, is this the second part of it? I know there's two parts of it. I just hit the button, clicked on the chopper button, and it started playing. And they're already on Mandalore. They're already in the thick of the fight, if you will. I will say the first part of the episode I was a little kind of disappointed on. I feel like it was all set up just to go ahead and have them use the weapon. You know, the whole saving her father, I wish we would have gotten more about Sabine's father, other than it sounds like she got a lot of her artistic ability from him, but her creativity from her mother. I do like that we got a little bit of Sabine's background, her family, because we've never seen her father before. But the whole episode seemed kind of like it was an attack on a convoy. You know, they spent 20 minutes on that, and then like the weapon at the very end. And then the next episode is where it all kind of comes together. But I feel like it leads to what's going to happen next, where hopefully some of Mandalore will be able to help support the Rebel Alliance, or vice versa, the Alliance be able to go there, and we can see more what happens with our crew from the Ghost going on with that.
Yeah.
As we go into this, we talked about the ethics, you know, part of it here, and Bo-Katan was the one who stood out. Now, remember, Bo-Katan had a troubled past. You know, she was a terrorist group. She was part of Death Watch, and you know, obviously she had very different views of ruling than her sister, who wanted more peace and everything else. What do you think, you know, if the tables have been turned and it was, you know, Bo-Katan being the one who had created the weapon versus Sabine? You know, we saw Sabine didn't have to take a step back, but would, do you think she would have had that same question of, like, having a super weapon to destroy and being able to use it against the Empire? Do you think anyone would have stopped them?
So if Sabine would have had to have been the voice of reason,
mm-hmm.
I think there would have been voice of reason along the way. Probably by the wider Mandalorians. Like, if it's very inherent in their culture that it's honor above all else, then, you know, there's no honor in using a weapon like that. So I feel like fundamentally, whoever would have chosen to use it, if it was specifically within Mandalore itself, it would have been one of those things where it's like, actually, this is, we don't stand for this kind of thing. Like, this isn't who we are.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also a lot of to and fro on that, because Mandalore's been through such huge changes, in terms of, like, upheaval because of the Empire. And there are those who've opposed it greatly, and those who have bowed to it. And obviously we see a little bit of that throughout the episode with, like, them, particularly when the weapon comes to the point where it may be fully operational and able to actually destroy the Mandalorians. Like, they're like, oh, actually, this could be used to wipe us all out, whether we support the Empire or not. And so,
and Saxon uses it on his own men.
Yeah. Like, so, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of to and fro on that, because they're obviously very aware of what the weapon is capable of and what it can do. So they're very honor-bound. So I feel like even if it hadn't been Sabine who'd created it, if it had been another Mandalorian or anything like that, I think the reaction would have been the same, just from some other external force within the Mandalorians.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do like that this also, having see the weapon that she created, also gives us a little insight into Sabine's past, because mm-hmm. we know she worked, you know, she went to the Imperial Academy. You know, we found that out, you know, in episodes when she went to free, Wedge and Hobby from, you know, the Empire, or liberate them so they could defect. So we learned a little bit about that, but we didn't get too much. And this is right here, you know, this weapon right here is definitely something that would, you know, it kind of harkens on like a Galen Erso Death Star type thing. Like, you recognize you've created something that could have been used for something so creative, so powerful, so good, but has been, you know, perverted, if you will, into something that can be so devastating. Which she even mentioned that she sabotaged it on the first trial of it, and she destroyed all plans from it, and that's when she defected. Like, this was her turning point, and, you know, that's what happened. So I do think it's an interesting plot device for them to have used it such early on in this stage game. At the same time, it also is interesting to see that Grand Admiral Thrawn is pulling the strings of having used this device with Mandalore, because we know from the trailer of Rebels that Thrawn is also going to be competing against Director Krennic in Tarkin's eyes. And we learned a lot about Thrawn via the novel that came out. And there's another novel about Thrawn coming out soon that Timothy Zahn has finished. When that gets officially released, we'll get a date on that. But we've learned that, you know, Thrawn has aspirations to go as high as he can in the Imperial Navy, and so that way he can protect his people. So it's interesting to see how this is going to be used in the big, more grand scheme of things, when you think that Thrawn is the kind of puppeteer that we've seen in the, you know, previous season and now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, like I said, I was happy with it. I do like that in the end, Sabine recognized that Bo-Katan was the one who should lead, especially considering many people already consider her, because she was next in line from her sister, and that Bo-Katan accepted the Darksaber and united all the clans at the end. Like I said, that does make me feel like it's one of those things where it makes me feel like there's going to be something more with the Mandalorians in the grander scheme of what happens with our group of rebels from the Ghost. What do you think about Bo-Katan taking over the Darksaber and becoming the new Mandalore?
I really, really, really liked it. I thought it was such a good way to pull Rebels and Clone Wars series together, and it was really nice to wrap up that storyline for her and give her an end to her story, because that's slightly more hopeful, because obviously the way that she ended in Clone Wars is like not the best, not in the best place, really. Yeah. So, I don't know. I just really liked it. I thought it kind of came around full circle. It was just really nice to see. It was great to see her back. It was great to see how she changed and how her worldview had changed throughout the years since the Clone Wars, like, and everything that's happened since then. So, she's very much the same character, but very changed as well. And I feel like she is someone who is in a position to be a very good leader, and everyone seems to recognize that in her, which is why she ends up with the Darksaber. I really liked it. I thought it was a satisfying conclusion for me, and it was really nice to kind of close that circle off and bring the Mandalorian storyline from Clone Wars to an end in Rebels. So. I liked it.
Yeah. I think it was a good close, you know, a good close to the first episode arc in Rebels. Again, more of Rebels will be coming, and we'll talk about it each week in our news section, but I felt like this week it deserved to be spotlight. Anything about the premiere episode of season 4, Danya?
Yes.
The last season of Rebels?
The two premiere episodes. So the thing that I really, really like, and it's something really silly, I really liked through the entire episode, the little gag of Ezra not being able to use his jetpack.
That was good, because you're right, he hadn't been able to use it very much. And he's like, I don't want to be Mandalorian, like, I don't know how to use it very well. The other gag about Ezra that I also liked in this episode was when he rescues Sabine's father. And he says, are you with Sabine? He's like, yes, well, no, we're friends. We're just friends. Like, I'm with her here, but...
Ezra is so old.
That was... It was like, I was just like, Ezra, like, it was good. It was fun. Like, it reminds you that Ezra is still a kid.
Yeah.
That he's, you know, he's not the 16, you know, he's 16 years old when the film starts. A couple years is gone. So, he's still 18. Ish or something like that. So I like it. You know, it was good. Anything else? We didn't get much of Thrawn in this. We got him in the hologram.
Yeah.
Gar Saxon's little brother. That was kind of it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fairly self-contained set of episodes. I thought they were quite successful to just wrap up the Mandalorian storyline and allow us to move on to, I guess, telling the Thrawn story now and opposing him.
Yeah, the Thrawn story up to Rogue One, like, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing is, I feel like Rebels is going to end at Rogue One. I feel like it's going to.
It's going to get, like, as close as it's possibly going to get. Like,
I feel like it's going to be Rogue One. We're going to see the Battle of Scarif in Rebels. And we're going to find out what happens to the team. If they survive, cool, there might be like comics or stories that happen, like what happens to them during the actual films. But like, if they don't survive, or they sacrifice themselves so that Princess Leia can get away also, like, whatever they do, like, I feel like it's gonna culminate, you know, it's gonna be the finale is gonna be during the Battle of Scarif.
Yeah,
like, so we know. Or like, if not the finale there, like, it'll finish there and then we'll see what happens right afterwards, and that's gonna be the end of it. But overall, good start to it. We're excited to see where the rest of season 4 takes us, and then what Lucasfilm Animation has for us after Rebels is complete.
I know.
All right. I know, right? We can only hope and see what
have. Seen the preview for next week's episode?
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. We'll have to watch that and talk about that next week.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.